She could just about get out of bed without stepping on somebody now, which was lucky for them because she was the first one up every morning. She might have gotten away with leaving the light on, but it wasn't worth the risk. She didn't want to have to look at Richie again. He looked exactly like a rat. Like the human being version of a rat. Like the villain in a Don Bluth movie. Who knew what her mom saw in him? Eleanor's dad was messed up looking, too. Every once in a while, when Richie managed to take a bath, put on decent clothes, and stay sober all on the same day, Eleanor could sort of see why her mom might have thought he was handsome. Thank the Lord that didn't happen very often. When it did, Eleanor felt like going to the bathroom and sticking a finger down her throat. Anyway, whatever, she could still read. There was enough light coming in from the window.
Park. She read stuff as fast as he could give it to her, and when she handed it back to him the next morning, she always acted as if she were handing him something fragile, something precious. You wouldn't even know that she touched the comics except for the smell. Every book Park lent her came back smelling like perfume. Not like the perfume his mom wore, Imari, and not like the new girl, she smelled like vanilla. But she made his comics smell like roses. A whole field of them. She'd read all his Alan Moore in less than 3 weeks. Now he was giving her ex-comics 5 at a time, and he could tell that she liked them because she wrote the characters' names on her books, in between band names and song lyrics. They still didn't talk on the bus, but it had become a less confrontational silence. Almost friendly, but not quite. Park would have to talk to her today, to tell her that he didn't have anything to give her. He'd overslept, then forgotten to grab the stack of comics he set out for her the night before. He hadn't even had time to eat breakfast or brush his teeth, which made him self-conscious, knowing he was going to be sitting so close to her. But when she got on the bus and handed him yesterday's comics, all Park did was shrug. She looked away. They both looked down. She was wearing that ugly necktie again. Today it was tied around her wrist. Her arms and wrists were scattered with freckles. Layers of them in different shades of gold and pink, even on the back of her hands. Little boy hands, his mom would call them, with short, short nails and ragged cuticles. She stared down at the books in her lap. Maybe she thought he was mad at her. He stared at her books, too, covered in ink and Art Nouveau doodles. "So," he said, before he knew what to say next, "you like the Smiths?" He was careful not to blow his morning breath on her. She looked up, surprised, maybe confused. He pointed at her book, where she'd written, "How soon is now?" in tall green letters. "I don't know," she said. "I've never heard them."
"So you just want people to think you like the Smiths?"
He couldn't help but sound disdainful.
"Yeah," she said, looking around the bus. "I'm trying to impress the locals."
He didn't know if she could help but sound like a smartass, but she sure wasn't trying. The air soured between them. Park shifted against the wall. She looked across the aisle to stare out the window. When he got to English, he tried to catch her eye, but she looked away. He felt like she was trying so hard to ignore him that she wouldn't even participate in class. Mr. Stessman kept trying to draw her out. She was his new favorite target whenever things got sleepy in class. Today, they were supposed to be discussing Romeo and Juliet, but nobody wanted to talk.
"You don't seem troubled by their deaths, Miss Douglas."
"I'm sorry," she said. She narrowed her eyes at him.
"It doesn't strike you as sad?" Mr. Stessman asked. "Two young lovers lay dead. Never was a story of more woe. Doesn't that get to you?"
"I guess not," she said.
"Are you so cold, so cool?"
He was standing over her desk, pretending to plead with her.
"No," she said. "I just don't think it's a tragedy."
"It's the tragedy," Mr. Stessman said.
She rolled her eyes. She was wearing 2 or 3 necklaces, old fake pearls, like Park's grandmother wore to church, and she twisted them while she talked.
"But he's so obviously making fun of them," she said.
Who is?
Shakespeare.
Do tell.
She rolled her eyes again. She knew Mr. Stessman's game by now.
Romeo and Juliet are just two rich kids who've always gotten every little thing they want, and now they think they want each other.
They're in love,
Mr. Stessman said, clutching his heart.
They don't even know each other, she said.
It was love at first sight.
It was, oh my God, he's so cute at first sight. If Shakespeare wanted you to believe they were in love, he wouldn't tell you in almost the very first scene that Romeo was hung up on Rosaline.
It's Shakespeare making fun of love, she said.
Then why has it survived?
I don't know, because Shakespeare's a really good writer?
No, Mr. Stessman said. Someone else, someone with a heart. Mr. Sheridan, what beats in your chest? Tell us, why has Romeo and Juliet survived 400 years?
Park hated talking in class. Eleanor frowned at him, then looked away. He felt himself blush.
Because, he said quietly, looking at his desk. Because people want to remember what it's like to be young and in love?
Mr. Stessman leaned back against the blackboard and rubbed his beard.
Is that right? Park asked.
Oh, it's definitely right, Mr. Stessman said. I don't know if that's why Romeo and Juliet has become the most beloved play of all time. But yes, Mr. Sheridan, truer words never spoken.
She didn't acknowledge Park in history class, but she never did. When he got on the bus that afternoon, she was already there. She got up to let him have his place by the window, and then she surprised him by talking, quietly, almost under her breath. But talking.
It's more like a wish list, she said.
What?
They're songs I'd like to hear, or bands I'd like to hear, stuff that looks interesting.
If you've never heard the Smiths, how do you even know about them?
I don't know, she said defensively. My friends, my old friends, magazines, I don't know, around.
Why don't you just listen to them?
She looked at him like he was officially an idiot.
It's not like they play the Smiths on Sweet 98.
And then, when Park didn't say anything, she rolled her inky brown eyes into the back of her head.
God,
she said.
They didn't talk anymore all the way home. That night, while he did his homework, Park made a tape with all his favorite Smith songs, plus a few songs by Echo and the Bunnymen and Joy Division. He put the tape and 5 more X comics into his backpack before he went to bed.
Chapter 11. Eleanor. Why are you so quiet? Eleanor's mother asked. Eleanor was taking a bath, and her mom was making 15 bean soup. That leaves 3 beans for each of us, Ben had cracked to Eleanor earlier. I'm not quiet. I'm taking a bath. Usually you sing in the bathtub.
I do not, Eleanor said.
You do. You usually sing Rocky Raccoon.
God. Well, thanks for telling me. I won't anymore. God.
Eleanor got dressed quickly and tried to squeeze past her mother. Her mom grabbed her by the wrists.
I like to hear you sing, she said.
She reached for a bottle on the counter behind Eleanor and rubbed a drop of vanilla behind each of the girl's ears. Eleanor raised her shoulders like it tickled.
Why do you always do that? I smell like a strawberry shortcake doll.
I do it, her mom said, because it's cheaper than perfume, but it smells just as good. Then she rubbed some vanilla behind her own ears and laughed. Eleanor laughed with her and stood there for a few seconds, smiling. Her mom was wearing soft old jeans and a t-shirt, and her hair was pulled back in a smooth ponytail. She looked almost like she used to. There was a picture of her at one of Maisie's birthday parties, scooping ice cream cones with a ponytail just like that. Are you okay? Her mom asked. Yeah, Eleanor said. Yeah, I'm just tired. I'm going to do my homework and go to bed. Her mom seemed to know that something was off, but she didn't push. She used to make Eleanor tell her everything. What's going on up there? She'd say, knocking on the top of Eleanor's head. Are you making yourself crazy? Her mom hadn't said anything like that since Eleanor moved home. She seemed to realize that she'd lost her right to knock. Eleanor climbed up onto her bunk and pushed the cat to the end. She didn't have anything to read. Nothing new, anyway. Was he done bringing her comics? Why had he even started? She ran her fingers over the embarrassing song titles, This Charming Man and How Soon Is Now on her math book. She wanted to scribble them out, but he'd probably notice and lord it over her. Eleanor really was tired. That wasn't a lie. She'd been staying up reading almost every night. She fell asleep that night right after dinner. She woke up to shouting. Richie shouting. Eleanor couldn't tell what he was saying. Underneath the shouting, her mother was crying. She sounded like she'd been crying for a long time. She must be completely out of her head if she was letting them hear her cry like that. Eleanor could tell that everyone else in the room was already awake. She hung off the bunk until she could see the little kids take shape in the dark. All four of them were sitting together in a clump of blankets on the floor. Maisie was holding the baby, rocking him almost frantically. Eleanor slid off the bed soundlessly and huddled with them. Mouse immediately climbed into her lap. He was shaking and wet, and he wrapped his arms and legs around Eleanor like a monkey. Their mother shrieked two rooms away, and they all five jumped together. If this had happened two summers ago, Eleanor would have run and banged on the door herself. She would have yelled at Richie to stop. She would have called 911 at the very, very, very least. But now that seemed like something a child would do. Or a fool. Now all she could think about was what they were going to do if the baby actually started to cry. Thank God he didn't. Even he seemed to realize that trying to make this stop would only ever make it worse. When her alarm went off the next morning, Eleanor couldn't remember having fallen to sleep. She couldn't remember when the crying had stopped. A horrible thought came to her, and she got up, stumbling over the kids and the blankets. She opened the bedroom door and smelled bacon, which meant that her mother was alive, and that her stepdad was probably still eating breakfast. Eleanor took a deep breath. She smelled like pee. God! The cleanest clothes she had were the ones she wore yesterday, which Tina would surely point out because it was a goddamn gym day on top of everything else. She grabbed her clothes and stepped purposefully out into the living room, determined not to make eye contact with Richie if he was there. He was. Demon. That bastard. Her mother was standing at the stove, standing more still than usual. You couldn't not notice the bruise on the side of her face, or the hickey under her chin. That fuck, that fuck, that fuck. Mom, Eleanor whispered urgently, I have to clean off. Her mother's eyes slowly focused on her. What? Eleanor gestured at her clothes, which probably just looked wrinkled. I slept on the floor with Mouse. Her mother glanced nervously into the living room. Richie would punish Mouse if he knew. Okay, okay, she said, pushing Eleanor into the bathroom. Give me your clothes, I'll watch the door. And don't let him smell it. I don't need it this morning. As if Eleanor were the one who'd peed all over everything. She washed off the top half of her body, then the bottom, so that she wouldn't ever be totally naked. Then she walked back through the living room, wearing yesterday's clothes, trying really hard not to smell like pee. Her books were in her bedroom, but Eleanor didn't want to open the door and let out any more acrid air, so she just left. She got to the bus stop 15 minutes early. She still felt rumpled and panicked, and thanks to the bacon, Her stomach was growling.
Chapter 12. Park. When Park got on the bus, he'd set the comics and Smith's tape on the seat next to him, so they'd just be waiting for her, so he wouldn't have to say anything. When she got on the bus a few minutes later, Park could tell that something was wrong. She got on like she was lost and ended up there. She was wearing the same thing she'd worn yesterday, which wasn't that weird. She was always wearing a different version of the same thing. But today was different. Her neck and wrists were bare, and her hair was a mess. A pile, an all-over glob of red curls. She stopped at their seat and looked down at the pile of stuff he'd left for her. Where were his school books? Then she picked everything up, careful as ever, and sat down. Park wanted to look at her face, but he couldn't. He stared at her wrists instead. She picked up the cassette. He'd written, "How soon is now?" and more on the thin white sticker. She held it out to him. "Thank you," she said.
Now, that was something he'd never heard her say before.
"But I can't."
He didn't take it.
"It's for you. Take it,"
he whispered. He looked up from her hands to her dropped chin.
"No," she said. "I mean, thank you, but I can't."
She tried again to give him the tape, but he still wouldn't take it.
Why did she have to make every little thing so hard? "I don't want it," he said.
She clenched her teeth and glared. She really must hate him.
"No,"
she said, practically loud enough for other people to hear.
"I mean, I can't. I don't have any way to listen to it. God, just take it back."
He took it. She covered her face. The kid in the seat across from them, a twerpy senior who was actually named Junior, was watching. Park frowned at Junior until he turned away. Then Park turned back to the girl. He took his Walkman out of the pocket of his trench coat and popped out his dead Kennedy's tape. He slid the new tape in, pressed play, then, carefully, put the headphones over her hair. He was so careful, he didn't even touch her. He could hear the swampy guitar start and then the first line of the song, "I am the sun and the air." She lifted her head a little, but didn't look at him. She didn't move her hands away from her face. When they got to school, she took the headphones off and gave them back to him. They got off the bus together and stayed together, which was weird. Usually they broke away from each other as soon as they hit the sidewalk. That's what seemed weird now, Park thought. They walked the same way every day. Her locker was just down the hall from his. How had they managed to go their separate ways every morning? Park stopped for a minute when they got to her locker. He didn't step close to her, but he stopped. She stopped too. "Well," he said, looking down the hall, "now you've heard the Smiths." And she... Eleanor laughed.
Eleanor. She should have just taken the tape. She didn't need to be telling everybody what she had and didn't have. She didn't need to be telling weird Asian kids anything. Weird Asian kid. She was pretty sure he was Asian. It was hard to tell. He had green eyes and skin the color of sunshine through honey. Maybe he was Filipino. Was that in Asia? Probably. Asia's out of control huge. Eleanor had only known one Asian person in her life, Paul, who was in her math class at her old school. Paul was Chinese. His parents had moved to Omaha to get away from the Chinese government, which seemed like an extreme choice. Like they'd looked at the globe and said, "Yep, that's as far away as possible." Paul was the one who'd taught Eleanor to say Asian and not Oriental. "Orientals for food," he'd said. "Whatever, La Choy boy," she'd said back. Eleanor couldn't figure out what an Asian person was doing in the flats anyway. Everybody else here was seriously white, like white by choice. Eleanor had never even heard the N-word said out loud until she moved here, but the kids on her bus used it like it was the only way to indicate that somebody was black, like there was no other word or phrase that would work. Eleanor stayed away from the N-word, even in her head. It was bad enough that, thanks to Richie's influence, she went around mentally calling everyone she met a motherfucker. Irony. There were three or four other Asian kids at their school, cousins. One of them had written an essay about being a refugee from Laos. And then there was old Green Eyes, whom she was apparently going to tell her whole life story to. Maybe on the way home she'd tell him that she didn't have a phone, or a washing machine, or a toothbrush. That last thing she was thinking about telling her counselor. Mrs. Dunn had sat Eleanor down on her first day of school and given a little speech about how Eleanor could tell her anything. All through the speech, she kept squeezing the fattest part of Eleanor's arm. If Eleanor told Mrs. Dunn everything, about Richie, her mom, everything, Eleanor didn't know what would happen. But if she told Mrs. Dunn about the toothbrush, maybe Mrs. Dunn would just get her one. And then Eleanor could stop sneaking into the bathroom after lunch to rub her teeth with salt. She'd seen that in a Western once. It probably didn't even work. The bell rang. 10:12. Just two more periods until English. She wondered if he'd talk to her in class. Maybe that's what they did now. She could still hear that voice in her head. Not his, the singer's. From the Smiths. You could hear his accent, even when he was singing. He sounded like he was crying out. I am the sun and the air. Eleanor didn't notice at first how unhorrible everyone was being in gym. Her head was still on the bus. They were playing volleyball today, and once Tina said, "You're serve, bitch," but that was it, and that was practically jocular, all things Tina considered. When Eleanor got to the locker room, she realized why Tina had been so low-key. She was just waiting. Tina and her friends, and the black girls too, everybody wanted a piece of this, were standing at the end of Eleanor's row, waiting for her to walk to her locker. It was covered with Kotex pads. A whole box, it looked like. At first, Eleanor thought the pads were actually bloody, but when she got closer, she could see that it was just red magic marker. Somebody had written Raghead and Big Red on a few of the pads, but they were the expensive kind, so the ink was already starting to absorb. If Eleanor's clothes weren't in that locker, if she were wearing anything other than this gym suit, she would have just walked away. Instead, she walked past the girls with her chin as high as she could manage and methodically peeled the pads off her locker. There were even some inside, stuck to her clothes. Eleanor cried a little bit. She couldn't help it. But she kept her back to everybody so there wouldn't be a show. It was all over in a few minutes anyway, because nobody wanted to be late to lunch. Most of the girls still had to change and redo their hair. After everyone else walked away, two black girls stayed. They walked over to Eleanor and started pulling pads off the wall. "Ain't no thing," one of the girls whispered, crumpling a pad into a ball. Her name was Denise, and she looked too young to be in the 10th grade. She was small, and she wore her hair in two braided pigtails. Eleanor shook her head, but didn't say anything. "Those girls are trifling," Denise said. "They're so insignificant, God can hardly see them." "Mm-hmm," the other girl agreed. Eleanor was pretty sure her name was Bibi. Bibi was what Eleanor's mom would call a big girl, much bigger than Eleanor. Bibi's gym suit was even a different color from everybody else's, like they'd had to special order it for her, which made Eleanor feel bad about feeling so bad about her own body, and which also made her wonder why she was the official fat girl in the class. They threw the pads in the trash and pushed them under some wet paper towels so that nobody would find them. If Denise and Bibi wouldn't have been standing there, Eleanor might have kept some of the pads, the ones that didn't have any writing on them, because, God, what a waste. She was late to lunch, then late to English, and if she didn't know already that she liked that stupid effing Asian kid, she knew it now. Because even after everything that had happened in the last 45 minutes, and everything that had happened in the last 24 hours, all Eleanor could think about was seeing Park.
Park. When they got back on the bus, she took his Walkman without arguing, and without making him put it on for her. Had to stop before hers, she handed it back.
"You can borrow it," he said quietly. "Listen to the rest of the tape."
"I don't want to break it," she said.
"You're not going to break it."
"I don't want to use up the batteries."
"I don't care about the batteries."
She looked up at him then, in the eye, maybe for the first time ever. Her hair looked even crazier than it had this morning, more frizzy than curly, like she was working on a big red afro. But her eyes were dead serious, cold sober. Any cliche you've ever heard used to describe Clint Eastwood, those were Eleanor's eyes.
"Really," she said, "you don't care."
"They're just batteries," he said.
She emptied the batteries and the tape from Park's Walkman, handed it back to him, then got off the bus without looking back.
God, she was weird.
Eleanor. The batteries started to die at 1 a.m., but Eleanor kept listening for another hour until the voices slowed to a stop. Chapter 13. Eleanor. She remembered her books today, and she was wearing fresh clothes. She'd had to wash her jeans out in the bathtub last night, so they were still kind of damp. But altogether, Eleanor felt 1,000 times better than she had yesterday. Even her hair was halfway cooperating. She'd clumped it up into a bun and wrapped it with a rubber band. It was going to hurt like crazy trying to tear the rubber band out, but at least it was staying for now. Best of all, she had Park's songs in her head, and in her chest, somehow. There was something about the music on that tape. It felt different. Like it set her lungs and her stomach on edge. There was something exciting about it, and something nervous. It made Eleanor feel like everything, like the world, wasn't what she'd thought it was. And that was a good thing. That was the greatest thing. When she got on the bus that morning, she immediately lifted her head to find Park. He was looking up, too, like he was waiting for her. She couldn't help it. She grinned, just for a second. As soon as she sat down, Eleanor slunk low in the seat so the back of the bus ruffians wouldn't be able to see from the top of her head how happy she felt. She could feel Park sitting next to her, even though he was at least 6 inches away. She handed him the comics, then tugged nervously at the green ribbon wound round her wrist. She couldn't think of what to say. She started to worry that maybe she wouldn't say anything, that she wouldn't even thank him. Park's hands were perfectly still in his lap, and perfectly perfect. Honey-colored, with clean pink fingernails. Everything about him was strong and slender. Every time he moved, he had a reason. They were almost to school when he broke the silence. "Did you listen?" She nodded, letting her eyes climb as high as his shoulders. "Did you like it?" he asked. She rolled her eyes. "Oh my God, it was just like..." She spread out all her fingers. "So awesome." "Are you being sarcastic? I can't tell." She looked up at his face, even though she knew how that was going to feel, like someone was hooking her insides out through her chest. "No, it was awesome. I didn't want to stop listening. That one song, is it Love Will Tear Us Apart?" "Yeah, Joy Division." "Oh my God, that's the best beginning to a song ever." He imitated the guitar and the drums. "Yeah, yeah, yeah," she said. "I just wanted to listen to those 3 seconds over and over." "You could have." His eyes were smiling, his mouth only sort of. "I didn't want to waste the batteries," she said. He shook his head like she was dumb. Plus, she said, I love the rest of it just as much. Like the high part, the melody, the da, 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 da. He nodded. And his voice at the end, she said, when he goes just a little bit too high. And then the very end, where it sounds like the drums are fighting it, like they don't want the song to be over. Park made drum noises with his mouth. Ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. I just want to break that song into pieces, she said, and love them all to death. That made him laugh. What about the Smiths? He asked. I didn't know who was who, she said. I'll write it down for you. I liked it all. Good, he said. I loved it. He smiled, but turned away to look out the window. She looked down. They were pulling into the parking lot. Eleanor didn't want this new talking thing, like really talking back and forth and smiling at each other, to stop. And, she said quickly, I love the X-Men, but I hate Cyclops. He whipped his head back. You can't hate Cyclops. He's team captain. He's boring. He's worse than Batman. What? You hate Batman? God, so boring. I can't even make myself read it. Whenever you bring Batman, I catch myself listening to Steve or staring out the window, wishing I was in hypersleep. The bus came to a stop. Huh, he said, standing up. He said it really judgmentally. What? Now I know what you're thinking when you stare out the window. No, you don't, she said. I mix it up. Everybody else was pushing down the aisle past them. Eleanor stood up, too. I'm bringing you The Dark Knight Returns, he said. What's that? Only the least boring Batman story ever. The least boring Batman story ever, huh? Does Batman raise both eyebrows? He laughed again. His face completely changed when he laughed. He didn't have dimples, exactly, but the sides of his face folded in on themselves, and his eyes almost disappeared. Just wait, he said.
Park. That morning, in English, Park noticed that Eleanor's hair came to a soft red point on the back of her neck.
Eleanor. That afternoon in history, Eleanor noticed that Park chewed on his pencil when he was thinking. And that the girl sitting behind him, what's her name, Kim, with the giant breasts and the orange Esprit bag, obviously had a crush on him.
Park. That night, Park made a tape with the Joy Division song on it, over and over again. He emptied all his handheld video games and Josh's remote control cars and called his grandma to tell her that all he wanted for his birthday in November was AA batteries.
Chapter 14. Eleanor. I know she doesn't think I'm going to jump over that thing, Denise said. Denise and the other girl, the big girl, Bibi, talked to Eleanor now and Jim, because being assaulted with maxi pads is a great way to win friends and influence people. Today in class, their gym teacher, Mrs. Burt, had shown them how to swing over a 1,000-year-old gymnastics horse. She said that next time, everybody had to try. She has got another thing coming, Denise said after class in the locker room. Do I look like Mary Lou Retton? Bibi giggled. Better tell her you didn't eat your Wheaties. Actually, Eleanor thought, Denise did kind of look like a gymnast, with her little girl bangs and braids. She looked way too young to be in high school, and her clothes just made it worse. Puffed sleeve shirts, overalls, matching ponytail balls. She wore her gym suit baggy, like a romper. Eleanor wasn't scared of the horse, but she didn't want to have to run down the mats with the whole class watching her. She didn't want to run, period. It made her breasts feel like they were going to detach from her body. I'm going to tell Mrs. Burt that my mom doesn't want me to do anything that might rupture my hymen, Eleanor said, for religious reasons. For real? Bibi asked. No, Eleanor said, giggling. Well, actually. You're nasty, Denise said, hitching up her overalls. Eleanor put her t-shirt on over her head, then wriggled out of her gym suit, using the shirt as cover. Are you coming? Denise asked. Well, I'm probably not going to start skipping class now just because of gymnastics, Eleanor said, hopping to pull up her jeans. No, are you coming to lunch? Oh, Eleanor said, looking up. They were waiting for her at the end of the lockers. Yeah. Then hurry up, Miss Jackson. She sat with Denise and Bibi at their usual table by the windows. During passing period, Eleanor saw Park walk by.
Park. Why can't you get your driver's license by homecoming? Cal asked. Mr. Stessman had them in small groups. They were supposed to be comparing Juliet to Ophelia. Because I can't bend time and space, Park said. Eleanor was sitting across the room by the windows. She was paired up with a guy named Eric, a basketball player. He was talking, and Eleanor was frowning at him. If you had your car, Cal said, we could ask him. You can ask him, Park said. Eric was one of those tall guys who always walked with his shoulders about a foot behind his hips, constantly doing the limbo, like he was afraid to hit his head on every door jam. She wants to go with the group, Cal said. Plus, I think she likes you. What? I don't want to go to homecoming with Kim. I don't even like her. I mean, you know, you like her. I know. That's why the plan works. We all go to homecoming together. She figures out you don't like her. She's miserable. And guess who's standing right there asking her to slow dance? I don't want to make Kim miserable. It's her or me, man. Eric said something else, and Eleanor frowned again. Then she looked over at Park and stopped frowning. Park smiled. 1 minute, Mr. Stessman said. Crap, Cal said. What have we got? Ophelia was bonkers, right? And Juliet was what, a sixth grader?
Eleanor. So, Psylocke is another girl telepath? Uh-huh, Park said. Every morning when Eleanor got on the bus, she worried that Park wouldn't take off his headphones, that he would stop talking to her as suddenly as he'd started. And if that happened, if she got on the bus one day and he didn't look up, she didn't want him to see how devastated it would make her. So far it hadn't happened. So far they hadn't stopped talking, like literally. They talked every second they were sitting next to each other, and almost every conversation started with the words, "What do you think?" "What did Eleanor think about that U2 album? She loved it." "What did Park think of Miami Vice? He thought it was boring." "Yes," they said when they agreed with each other, back and forth. "Yes, yes, yes, I know, exactly, right?" They agreed about everything important and argued about everything else. And that was good, too, because whenever they argued, Eleanor could always crack Park up. "Why do the X-Men need another girl telepath?" she asked. "This one has purple hair." "It's also sexist." Park's eyes got wide. Well, sort of wide. Sometimes she wondered if the shape of his eyes affected how he saw things. That was probably the most racist question of all time. "The X-Men aren't sexist," he said, shaking his head. "They're a metaphor for acceptance. They've sworn to protect a world that hates and fears them." "Yeah," she said. "But there's no but," he said, laughing. "But," Eleanor insisted, "the girls are also stereotypically girly and passive. Half of them just think really hard. Like that's their superpower, thinking. And Shadowcat's power is even worse. She disappears." "She becomes intangible," Park said. "That's different." "It's still something you could do in the middle of a tea party," Eleanor said. "Not if you were holding hot tea. Plus, you're forgetting Storm." "I'm not forgetting Storm. She controls the weather with her head. It's still just thinking, which is about all she could do in those boots." "She has a cool mohawk," Park said. "Irrelevant," Eleanor answered. Park leaned his head back against the seat, smiling, and looked at the ceiling. "The X-Men aren't sexist." "Are you trying to think of an empowered X-Woman?" Eleanor asked. "How about Dazzler? She's a living disco ball. Or the White Queen? She thinks really hard while wearing spotless white lingerie." "What kind of power would you want?" he asked, changing the subject. He turned his face toward her, laying his cheek against the top of the seat, still smiling.
I'd want to fly, Eleanor said, looking away from him. I know it's not very useful, but it's flying.
Yes, he said.
Park.
Damn, Park, are you going on a ninja mission?
Ninjas wear black, Steve.
What?
Park should have gone inside to change after Taekwondo, but his dad said he had to be back by 9, and that gave him less than an hour to show Eleanor. Steve was outside working on his Camaro. He didn't have his license yet either, but he was getting ready.
Going to see your girlfriend? He called to Park.
What?
Sneaking out to see your girlfriend, Bloody Mary?
She's not my girlfriend, Park said, then swallowed.
Sneaking out ninja style, Steve said.
Park shook his head and broke into a run.
Well, she wasn't, he thought to himself, cutting through the alley.
He didn't know where Eleanor lived exactly. He knew where she got on the bus, and he knew that she lived next to the school.
It must be this one, he thought.
He stopped at a small white house. There were a few broken toys in the yard, and a giant Rottweiler was asleep on the porch. Park walked toward the house slowly. The dog lifted its head and watched him for a second, then settled back to sleep. It didn't move, even when Park climbed the steps and knocked on the door. The guy who answered looked too young to be Eleanor's dad. Park was pretty sure he'd seen this guy around the neighborhood before. He didn't know whom he'd expected to come to the door. Somebody more exotic. Somebody more like her. The guy didn't even say anything, just stood at the door and waited.
Is Eleanor home? Park asked. Who wants to know?
He had a nose like a knife, and he looked straight down it at Park.
We go to school together, Park said.
The guy looked at Park for another second, then closed the door. Park wasn't sure what to do. He waited for a few minutes, then, right as he was thinking about leaving, Eleanor opened the door just enough to slide through. Her eyes were round with alarm. In the dark like this, it didn't even look like she had irises. As soon as he saw her, he knew it had been a mistake to come here. He felt like he should have known that even sooner. He'd been so caught up in showing her.
Hey, he said. Hi. I came to challenge me in hand-to-hand combat?
Park reached into the front of his dobok and pulled out the second issue of Watchmen. Her face lit up. She was so pale, so luminous under the streetlight, that wasn't just an expression.
Have you read it? She asked.
He shook his head. I thought we could... together. Eleanor glanced back at the house, then stepped quickly off the porch. He followed her down the steps, across the gravel driveway, to the back stoop of the elementary school. There was a big safety light over the door. Eleanor sat on the top step, and he sat next to her. It took twice as long to read Watchmen as it did any other comic, and it took even longer tonight because it was so strange to be sitting together somewhere other than on the bus. To even see each other outside of school. Eleanor's hair was wet and hanging in long, dark curls around her face. When they got to the last page, all Park wanted to do was sit and talk about it. All he really wanted to do was sit and talk to Eleanor. But she was already standing up and looking back at her house.
I've got to go, she said.
Oh, he said.
Okay. I guess I do, too.
She left him sitting on the elementary school steps. She was disappearing inside the house before he could think about saying goodbye.
Eleanor. When she walked back into the house, the living room was dark, but the TV was on. Eleanor could see Richie sitting on the couch and her mom standing in the doorway of the kitchen. It was just a few steps to her room.
Is that your boyfriend?
Richie asked before she made it. He didn't look up from the TV. No, she said. He's just a boy from school.
What did he want?
To talk to me about an assignment. She waited in her bedroom doorway. Then, when Richie didn't say anything more, she stepped inside, shutting the door behind her.
"I know what you're up to,"
he said, raising his voice just as the door closed.
"Nothing but a bitch in heat."
Eleanor let his words hit her full on, took them right in the chin. She climbed into bed and clenched her eyes and jaw and fists, held everything clenched until she could breathe without screaming. Until this moment, she'd kept Park in a place in her head that she thought Richie couldn't get to, completely separate from this house and everything that happened here. It was a pretty awesome place, like the only part of her head fit for praying. But now Richie was in there, just pissing all over everything, making everything she felt feel as rank and rotten as him. Now she couldn't think about Park, about the way he looked in the dark, dressed in white, like a superhero, about the way he smelled, like sweat and bar soap, about the way he smiled when he liked something, with his lips just turned up at the corners, without feeling Richie leer. She kicked the cat out of the bed just to be mean. He squawked, but jumped right back up. "Eleanor," Maisie whispered from the bottom bunk, "was that your boyfriend?" Eleanor crushed her teeth together. "No," she whispered back viciously. "He's just a boy." Chapter 15. Eleanor. Her mother stood in the bedroom the next morning while Eleanor got ready. "Here," she whispered, taking the hairbrush and drawing Eleanor's hair into a ponytail without brushing out the curl. "Eleanor," she said. "I know why you're in here," Eleanor said, pulling away. "I don't want to talk about it." "Just listen." "No, I know. He won't come back, okay? I didn't invite him, but I'll tell him, and he won't come back."
"Okay, well, good," her mom said, folding her arms, still whispering. "It's just that you're so young."
"No," Eleanor said. "That's not what it is, but it doesn't even matter. He won't come back, okay?
It isn't even like that anyway."
Her mom left the room. Richie was still in the house. Eleanor ran out the front door when she heard him turn on the bathroom sink.
"It's not even like that," she thought as she walked to the bus stop,
and thinking it made her want to cry, because she knew it was true. And wanting to cry just made her angry. Because if she was going to cry about something, it was going to be the fact that her life was complete shit, not because some cool, cute guy didn't like her like that. Especially when just being Park's friend was pretty much the best thing that had ever happened to her. She must have looked ticked off when she got on the bus because Park didn't say hi when she sat down. Eleanor looked into the aisle. After a few seconds, he reached over and pulled at the old silk scarf she'd tied around her wrist.
"I'm sorry," he said.
"For what?" She even sounded angry. God, she was a jerk.
"I don't know," he said. "I feel like maybe I got you in trouble last night."
He pulled on the scarf again, so she looked at him. She tried not to look mad, but she'd rather look mad than look like she'd spent all night thinking about how beautiful his lips were.
"Was that your dad?"
he asked. She jerked her head back.
"No! No, that was my mother's husband. He's not really my anything. My problem, I guess."
"Did you get in trouble?"
"Sort of."
She really didn't want to talk to Park about Richie. She'd just about scraped all the Richie off the Park place in her head.
"I'm sorry," he said again.
"It's okay," she said. "It wasn't your fault. Anyway, thanks for bringing Watchmen. I'm glad I got to read it."
"It was cool, huh?"
"Oh, yeah. Kind of brutal. I mean, that part with the comedian."
"Yeah. Sorry."
"No, I didn't mean that. I mean, I think I need to reread it."
"I read it again twice last night."
You can take it tonight.
Yeah? Thanks.
He was still holding the end of her scarf, rubbing the silk idly between his thumb and fingers. She watched his hand. If he were to look up at her now, he'd know exactly how stupid she was. She could feel her face go soft and gummy. If Park were to look up at her now, he'd know everything. He didn't look up. He wound the scarf around his fingers until her hand was hanging in the space between them. Then he slid the silk and his fingers into her open palm. And Eleanor disintegrated.
Park. Holding Eleanor's hand was like holding a butterfly, or a heartbeat, like holding something complete and completely alive. As soon as he touched her, he wondered how he'd gone this long without doing it. He rubbed his thumb through her palm and up her fingers, and was aware of her every breath. Park had held hands with girls before. Girls at Skateland, a girl at the 9th grade dance last year. They'd kissed while they waited for her dad to pick them up. He'd even held Tina's hand back when they went together in the 6th grade. And always before, it had been fine. Not much different from holding Josh's hand when they were little kids crossing the street, or holding his grandma's hand when she took him to church. Maybe a little sweatier, a little more awkward. When he'd kissed that girl last year, with his mouth dry and his eyes mostly open, Park had wondered if maybe there was something wrong with him. He'd even wondered, seriously, while he was kissing her, he'd wonder this, whether he might be gay. Except he didn't feel like kissing any guys, either. And if he thought about She-Hulk or Storm instead of this girl, Dawn, the kissing got a lot better. Maybe I'm not attracted to real girls, he'd thought at the time. Maybe I'm some sort of perverted cartoon sexual. Or maybe, he thought now, he just didn't recognize all those other girls, the way a computer drive will spit out a disk if it doesn't recognize the formatting. When he touched Eleanor's hand, he recognized her. He knew.
Eleanor. Disintegrated. Like something had gone wrong beaming her onto the Starship Enterprise. If you've ever wondered what that feels like, it's a lot like melting, but more violent. Even in a million different pieces, Eleanor could still feel Park holding her hand, could still feel his thumb exploring her palm. She sat completely still because she didn't have any other option. She tried to remember what kind of animals paralyzed their prey before they ate them. Maybe Park had paralyzed her with his ninja magic, his Vulcan handhold, and now he was going to eat her. That would be awesome.
Park. They broke apart when the bus stopped. A flood of reality rushed through Park, and he looked around nervously to see if anyone had been watching them. Then he looked nervously at Eleanor to see if she'd noticed him looking. She was still staring at the floor, even as she picked up her books and stood in the aisle. If someone had been watching, what would they have seen? Park couldn't imagine what his face had looked like when he touched Eleanor, like somebody taking the first drink in a Diet Pepsi commercial, over-the-top bliss. He stood behind her in the aisle. She was just about his height. Her hair was pulled up, and her neck was flushed and splotchy. He resisted the urge to lay his cheek against it. He walked with her all the way to her locker and leaned against the wall as she opened it. She didn't say anything, just shifted some books onto the shelf and took down a few others. As the buzz of touching her faded, he was starting to realize that Eleanor hadn't actually done anything to touch him back. She hadn't bent her fingers around his. She hadn't even looked at him. She still hadn't looked at him. Jesus. He knocked gently on her locker door. Hey, he said. She shut the door. Hey, what? Okay, he asked. She nodded. I'll see you in English,
he asked. She nodded and walked away. Jesus.
Eleanor. All through first and second and third hour, Eleanor rubbed her palm. Nothing happened. How could it be possible that there were that many nerve endings all in one place? And were they always there? Or did they just flip on whenever they felt like it? Because if they were always there, how did she manage to turn doorknobs without fainting? Maybe this was why so many people said it felt better to drive a stick shift.
Park.
Jesus. Was it possible to rape somebody's hand? Eleanor wouldn't look at Park during English and history. He went to her locker after school, but she wasn't there. When he got on the bus, she was already sitting in their seat, but sitting in his spot, against the wall. He was too embarrassed to say anything. He sat down next to her and let his hands hang between his knees. Which meant she really had to reach for his wrist, to pull his hand into hers. She wrapped her fingers around his and touched his palm with her thumb. Her fingers were trembling. Park shifted in his seat and turned his back to the aisle. Okay, she whispered. He nodded, taking a deep breath. They both stared down at their hands. Jesus.
Chapter 16. Eleanor. Saturdays were the worst. On Sundays, Eleanor could think all day about how close it was to Monday, but Saturdays were 10 years long. She'd already finished her homework. Some creep had written, "Do I make you wet?" on her geography book, so she spent a really long time covering it up with a black ink pen. She tried to turn it into some kind of flower. She watched cartoons with the little kids until golf came on, then played double solitaire with Maisie until they were both bored stupid. Later, she'd listen to music. She'd saved the last two batteries Park had given her so that she could listen to her tape player today, when she missed him most. She had 5 tapes from him now, which meant if her batteries lasted, she had 450 minutes to spend with Park in her head, holding his hand. Maybe it was stupid, but that's what she did with him, even in her fantasies, even where anything was possible. As far as Eleanor was concerned, that just showed how wonderful it was to hold Park's hand. Besides, they didn't just hold hands. Park touched her hands like they were something rare and precious, like her fingers were intimately connected to the rest of her body, which, of course, they were. It was hard to explain. He made her feel like more than the sum of her parts. The only bad thing about their new bus routine was that it had seriously cut back on their conversations. She could hardly look at Park when he was touching her, and Park seemed to have a hard time finishing his sentences, which meant he liked her, ha. Yesterday, on the way home from school, their bus had to take a 15-minute detour because of a busted sewer pipe. Steve had started cussing about how he needed to get to his new job at the gas station, and Park had said, "Wow." "What?" Eleanor sat by the wall now, because it made her feel safer, less exposed. She could almost pretend that they had the bus to themselves. "I can actually burst sewers with my mind," Park said. "That's a very limited mutation," she said. "What do they call you?" "They call me, And then he'd started laughing and pulled at one of her curls. That was a new, awesome development, the hair touching. Sometimes he'd come up behind her after school and tug at her ponytail or tap the top of her bun. "I don't know what they call me," he said. "Maybe the public works," she said, laying her hand on top of his, finger to finger. Her fingertips came to his last knuckle. It might be the only part of her that was smaller than him. "You're like a little girl," he said.
What do you mean? Your hands.